episode 53 of Understanding Latin American Politics, the podcast. I'm Greg Weeks. I'm a political scientist at UNC Charlotte. And today I'm talking to Jürgen Buchenau, my good friend and colleague in history here at UNC Charlotte. He's a professor and chair of that department, also a fellow Tar Heel PhD, though we didn't overlap exactly. And we're going to be talking about Andrés Manuel López Obrador, who is the front runner, of course, for the Mexican presidential election. And what we're going to be doing is getting at to the historical side. So there's been plenty of analysis and punditry on the current events, but we're going to try to take a little bit more of a historical look. All right, today I'm sitting with Jürgen Buchenau, who is a professor of history and chair of the Department of History here at UNC Charlotte. All right, Jürgen, thanks for doing this.
Thank you for inviting me, Greg. I'm happy to be here.
So the topic today is the Mexican presidential election and AMLO in particular. And so Jürgen's role is to put in a historical perspective as an expert of the Mexican Revolution and a biographer of several of the key participants of the Mexican Revolution. There's been tons of analyses of the polls, which show AMLO ahead, all that sort of thing. But I hadn't seen anything looking at what the historical, you know, perspective is in Mexico itself. So to start with, is AMLO something new for Mexico, or is he familiar as a politician in Mexico?
I think he's both new and familiar. What's new about AMLO is actually not AMLO, but the electoral constellation of this presidential race, is that we have actually three broad coalitions that defy old conservative liberal or left-wing, right-wing divides. So you have a left-wing and right-wing party coming together in the coalition of Ricardo Anaya of the PAN, which is, of course, the main rival of AMLO. And AMLO's own Morena is basically allying not only with the Labour Party, but also with the Partido de Encuentro Social, which is basically a Pentecostal or Protestant-inspired party of family values. I think that allies with most of the U.S. Republicans' parties, social conservatism. So what's unusual about this election and AMLO's position in it is the willingness to be considerably broader in the coalition. I think where AMLO is more typical for Mexico is that he's the latest in the long line of populists, particularly left-wing populists that have run for election, and that really does go back to the Mexican Revolution in the beginning of the century and the first populist candidacies of the state party candidates in the 20s and 30s.
So this kind of person, do you think that Mexicans don't see it as particularly unusual?
No, they don't see it as unusual that somebody would portray themselves as a candidate of the people. He addresses familiar issues that have been talked about in Mexican history for the past 100 years or longer. And I think they're expecting a kind of a challenge from the left, particularly in a system that, of course, had the same party ruling for 71 years and then had 12 years of government by two different PAN or conservative presidents. But that's really not given the presidency to a left-wing candidate.
Right. So he's way ahead in the polls. And, I mean, it's true, as you said, that the left hasn't governed Mexico in a really long time, depending on who we would even label as leftist. But do Mexicans like him, or do they just hate everyone else more?
Well, some like him. It's the same question that you could ask about someone like Donald Trump. Do Americans like him?
Well, yes, true.
Some like him a lot. Others dislike him a lot. And I think the same thing is true of AMLO, is that some people have been devoted fans of his since the 2006 election, where he came officially within 240,000 votes of winning, and a lot of Mexicans insist to this day that he truly won. to other Mexicans, he's always been tepeque, which is a pretty ugly sweet water gar, a sort of fish from the waters of his native state of Tabasco. And they've never been able to see anything good about him. So I would say he's polarizing. It's fair to assert that the competition is really not overwhelming with Anaya and José Antonio Meade, is that these aren't really not very great candidates by the other two parties.
Yeah, and I mean, both the PAN and the PRI, at this point, they've had a chance to govern, and people are looking around saying that everything is still completely screwed up, right? So I was just trying to figure out how much is the left gaining ascendancy, and how much is it just that there's this opening and the PAN and the PRI just can't put together any sort of a convincing campaign?
I think that's fair. Both the PAN and the PRI, of course, are the parties blamed for whatever's gone wrong in the last 20 or 30 years, or really since the establishment of the PRI under a different name in 1929. What is now Morena, or the AMLO party, is considered the out party, the only party that hasn't had a chance to govern. The PAN, I think, is still beset by allegations that it was really ineffective, that it didn't change anything when it was in power, and that it, of course, oversaw the beginning of the drug wars and mounted a really ineffective response. And I think it's fair to say that the current pre-president, Enrique Peña Nieto, is reviled for a number of reasons, beginning from with corruption to, of course, the Ayotzinapa massacre in Guerrero, which he and his government were blamed for, and a number of other things, and even the recent, I think, upsurge again of violence, the 2017 homicide figures were the highest in Mexican history on record. So the PRI doesn't have much of a record to run on, and I think the PAN keeps getting associated with the early beginning, with the early part of the millennium, and the resurgence of the current problems.
So thinking again of the left in Mexico, I was trying to think of who we would even label as leftist. Would we label Lázaro Cárdenas as leftist at all?
I think he's leftist in a similar way in which AMLO is leftist.
Because I was going to ask, because right now, business leaders are trying to say that AMLO is going to be a disaster. So they're trying to scare people. You know, does that have any resonance in Mexican political history? Do people do that with Cárdenas or anybody else?
Well, they did it with Venustiano Carranza. They even did it with Francisco Madero in the revolution. So they do it with anybody who ever sounds the sentinel of economic nationalism. Which, of course, both Madero and Carranza did. You see the outcome of that in the 1917 Constitution in Article 27, which was, of course, an anti-business constitutional article as there ever was. And then after Carranza, you have Obregón run on an overtly pro-capitalist platform, and still the U.S. State Department withholding recognition from him, supposedly because he came to power by force, but really in actuality because of the Constitution and these legal reforms. So basically after 1917, to be left-wing simply meant being a defender of the Constitution. And so all the Mexican presidents fell in that, in that category, none more so than Cárdenas, who probably really believed in it. At the same time, even Cárdenas, at the time, was only anti-business in a certain sense. He, of course, expropriated 49 million acres of land, and he expropriated the oil industry, which is in part a focal point today of AMLO's campaign. But he left Mexican capitalism untouched. He was no Lenin or Stalin who engaged in wholesale expropriation of the Mexican utility industry, or even the other industries that they have, or the textile production. And so I think the Mexican left-wing presidents have always been of the attenuated variety, that they realized that they had to get along with global capitalists.
And so do you think Mexicans, are Mexicans afraid of AMLO, or do they see him pretty much as within that framework of he might move left, but he's going to stay within the framework that exists?
So some Mexican business leaders, some people close to them, are of course afraid. They call AMLO a new Hugo Chavez, and they're afraid of similar measures. But I don't think they can, in all honesty, claim this, because when AMLO was mayor of Mexico City, of course, he had a lot of power. And he's mostly remembered for two things. One is, of course, that he established a second story of the Periférico, which is a very important freeway in Mexico City. And it was dramatically expensive. And of course, Mexicans were upset because it cost so much money. Well, that was a project for which he needed private investors.
Yeah.
The other thing that he did is he moved all the migrant vendors, all the street vendors, out of the Mexico City street district, and basically subjected that wonderful heart of downtown Mexico City to a process of what U.S. historians of race would have called urban renewal, where basically they threw the poor out of Mexico City and gentrified the whole district. So I think if you look at AMLO's record, the one time that he had executive power, it's actually much more mixed, much more pragmatic. And so there are a number of Mexican businessmen, including Carlos Slim, the man with whom he cooperated, on both the segundo piso of the Periférico and on the downtown project. They're very aware that basically AMLO is no Hugo Chavez.
Okay, and the next Hugo Chavez, that's what the thing everybody wants to use, right? That's used everywhere.
Exactly.
Anybody remotely on the left, is they're going to be the next Hugo Chavez.
Right. And in Ecuador, of course, we have even a president whose first name is Lenin, who's
right.
in a wheelchair, and he was widely supposed to be awful, and like Hugo Chavez. And the first thing he does is he makes Julian Assange's seat at the embassy in London very hot because he wants to get along with the United States and with Great Britain. So it's very true, I think, that Hugo Chavez was an exceptional politician, and I don't see the example being repeated anywhere in Latin America, including in Mexico.
So we got to get to the Mexican Revolution, of course, given your own work. How do you think AMLO sees himself? Does he see himself? Does he identify with the revolution? Or how does he see himself?
So I think the young AMLO would have identified himself with the Mexican Revolution. When he came up in rural Tabasco, when he started working in various pre-offices in his home state, and even when he was a member of the Party of the Democratic Revolution, established by Cárdenas' son, Cuauhtémoc, I think he would have seen his roots as revolutionary. Now, one thing that happened in 2010, which was the revolution centennial, and the country's bicentennial of its national independence, was that the revolution really kind of became a backstory. It's that people no longer identified themselves with the revolution because the revolution had so obviously been a mask for the PRI for decades.
Right.
To carry out their authoritarian rule. So one thing I would say is that while individual revolutionary symbols are still alive, like Zapatismo, as you can see with the Zapatistas in Yucatan, the revolution, basically as a term, is not something that's useful for AMLO today. And I think that he would not see himself necessarily in the footprints of the revolution, in part because the PRD, which he left, is now an alliance with the PAN. And that is the party that still has the word revolution in there. His party, Morena, the National Renovation Movement, basically, of course, does not have the word revolution in it, but renovation.
I never thought of that. Renovation. And what's the renovating what? Renovating the revolution or renovating what?
Renovating the country.
Just the country in general. Yeah. Making it great again.
Making it great again, exactly. So there's it's been a rather stunning turn in the last 6 years or so that the revolution has lost its role in Mexico's public transcript and the way that people talk about politics.
Yeah, because he talks about oil, right? About national control over oil, but at least from what I've seen, not really in revolutionary terms.
No. Even though that oil, of course, is a revolutionary, basically a symbol. The Pemex, which was the state-owned oil company, was the last of the great state companies established basically after the revolution under state control, and was a very, I think, visible symbol of the last gasp of economic nationalism in the revolution. But I think that for AMLO, economic nationalism is the only part of the revolution that's useful to him right now. I mean, because, and in this he actually shares something with Donald Trump, the idea that the economy is supposed to serve the nation and not other nations. But I think AMLO has skillfully isolated the issue away from other issues of the revolution, such as land reform or municipal democracy, where he actually wouldn't look so good, where his positions are actually not basically jibing well with the revolutionary tradition. But revolutionary economic nationalism is the one, I think, platform of the revolution that resonates in his program.
Okay. Now, the other thing, and I always have to ask this question, is that one thing that people might not know about Jurgen is that you could bring up any issue, and he can tell you how the Mexican Revolution either caused it or is important for understanding it. So for understanding what's going on in Mexico right now with this election, how does the revolution explain it?
I think the revolution provided the world's first constitutional program for social rights. It established free education and called for the right of peasants to have their own land. Basically established the right of the nation to own the land and the subsoil, which was theoretically the case under Spanish law, but never under independent nations. The Constitution provided a manifesto for left-wing movements everywhere in Latin America to claim basically that the nation superseded the will of selfish private investors and wealthy individuals, whether foreign or domestic. And so obviously this platform of 1917 was never fully implemented and then really rolled back after 1982, the banking crisis, which led the IMF to step in with conditions, and they came at the end of a 12-year period where Mexico was governed by presidents like AMLO, so left-wing populists, Luis Echeverria and José López Portillo. He sounds a lot more like them, actually, than like Cárdenas,
okay,
because they're closer to us in time.
Right.
And we call them neo-populists because they basically reprised these revolutionary themes. So I think we can see AMLO in that tradition of the left-wing populist who attempts to revive this promise of the nation to look out for its people and to defend the people against depredations by wealthy foreigners and Mexicans.
Okay. And by the way, if you run into Jurgen, just think of any issue and ask him to relate it to the Mexican Revolution. He'll be able to do it. That's like his vocation.
It's easy because it's true.
It's easy because it's true. We've kind of answered this question, though. We haven't talked so much about corruption. Do you think he governs significantly different from past presidents? I think of corruption in particular because everyone says they're going to fight corruption, and then it just seems to just remain entrenched.
Yeah. I don't think that AMLO is going to be a great corruption fighter. I mean, he comes himself out of the old PRI machine. A lot of the associates he has come from industry or come out of this machine, and indeed it's a constant mantra of the out party to get rid of corruption in Mexico, and then once they're in power they perpetuate it. And so I would be extremely skeptical of any claims that he will clean up Mexican government or drain the swamp, as it were.
So is it, what about anything else? I mean, you think like clientelism and use of executive power, all these things, do you think, is he going to pretty much fall in line with what we've been seeing in the past 20 years or so in Mexico?
I think he will, but he's going to have to share power, because not only does he have a coalition government of parties at the executive level, but the congressional and state level elections shape up so that different parties will be in control in different places. And so I think one of the good news stories in Mexico has been over the 30 years that the executive branch just has a lot less power than it used to.
That's true.
Congress is more independent, and the states have really independent governors, at least to an extent. And he will try to intimidate them and buy them out, just like every other president has done. But the fact is that AMLO is going to have to share power. I think where probably his greatest potential lies is actually in his relationships with the United States. Because Donald Trump is setting up such an easy foil for any Mexican president to really kind of play off his nationalism and his defense of the nation. And I think that is something he can use in dealing particularly with the governors at the border states who are notoriously independent and also more conservative than he is. He can use that to intimidate them. Okay. Basically this specter of Darth Trump basically looming over the small Mexican nation and threatening it.
And what you said at the beginning, I think, is also true. Anyone trying to compare him to Hugo Chavez or even compare him to Trump forgets that he's been part of the machine. Like, yeah. He's just not an outsider at all.
No, he's not. He's just not held any positions at the national government other than the mayor of Mexico City, which used to be a national government position.
But, I mean, he's always been within the party structure.
He has been. He's definitely not coming in as an entrepreneur or somebody who's a complete outsider of this political system.
So I'll just end with one last basic question. Is there any chance he's going to lose? Or is this pretty much 99%?
I think it's pretty much a done deal. The only thing that would upset the apple cart is if the Meade supporters get so despondent about their candidate that they tell 100% of them to vote for Anaya. And even then, you know, I'm not sure that every priest would vote for Anaya.
Okay.
So I think, but you're looking at him polling about 44-45% and Anaya about 30. So they would have to get about 75% or 80% of all Meade supporters. And the PRI would basically have to drop out of the election for AMLO to still blow this at this point.
Yeah, because we got about a month to go.
Yeah.
And so, then basically you just need something really dramatic. I guess if you had a candidate drop out, that would at least, it would cause ripples, but he's just so far ahead.
Well, and the Meade is not going to drop out because there are pre-candidates at the other levels.
Also true.
Government too, so
that's
he has
right.
to protect the down ballot candidates.
Okay, we're out of time. So I've been talking to Jürgen Buchenau, who's a history professor and chair of the history department here at UNC Charlotte. Jürgen, thanks as always.
Thank you, Greg.